reach for the booze. Bourbon? I ask. There's no way in hell we've got powdered sugar for a mint julep. Bourbon straight? Rocks? I suggest. No, that's gross. How about a margarita? Margarita? I practically snort. What kind of drink is that? A fun one, she says, frowning. I'm twisting the cap of the bottle when I stop and take her in again. The light is low in here, and it bathes her in a softness that makes me wonder again, who is this girl? Want me to make them? What? The margaritas. It's that or nothing for me. I can make them, I say. Blended? Of course. Of course. Lemon or triple sec, I ask. Strawberry, she says back. I laugh. We don't have strawberry. She shrugs. Then forget it. I'm not thirsty. We don't drink because we're thirsty. Then why are we drinking? Because I really fucking need one. Too much talk about silver envelopes today? Who are you? She shrugs. Cinderella, that's who. I can't stop looking at her. She's so fucking mysterious. I almost laugh when that word pops into my head. A hand goes to my chin as I consider what to do. Then I walk towards the door, pulling my keys out of my pocket. Where are you going? To get you some fucking strawberries. Don't forget the salt, she yells after me. And some powdered sugar. I try to slam the door closed on my way out of the house, but Nolan put a soft close mechanism on the hinges so the glass won't break by accident, and it's about as anticlimactic as this whole fucking day. I rev the engine of my Audi, then back out of the driveway, screeching my tires.
Chapter 15. Cindy. I stay out on the terrace, even after Pax comes back and starts blending up the drinks. He says nothing, just gets to work. And 10 minutes later, after many fucks and shits and goddammits, he casts a shadow over me when he blocks the lights from behind. Your drink, my lady. I smile, but tuck it away before I turn to face him. I take the drink and sip. Mmm, that's nice. It's weak as fuck, he says, grimacing as he swallows. And sweet. I like sweet drinks. Sugar, he says. Hmm? I ask, looking up at him. You smell like sugar. These stupid drinks you like must leak through your pores. Could be worse. I take another sip, then a gulp. Well, he says, holding his margarita glass out when I come up for air. Cheers. To the end of a very confusing day. I'll drink to that. Should we talk about it? I ask, not really wanting to talk about any of it. What's to talk about? Right. We both turn to the sound of the crashing waves down below, then lean our forearms on the terrace railing, drinks in hand. This is pretty. I bet Nolan Delaney comes here a lot. I catch a small chuckle from him. How'd you know it was his? Are we talking about it? I ask, looking up at him. No, but Nolan doesn't come here much. I really did buy this place for my mom, but I needed money to buy those islands, so I sold it to Nolan. Then he adds, with the understanding that he'd keep it safe for me, so it really is still mine. Except for the deed and all that good junk. But I'm still thinking about those islands. Why are you here? He asks. You brought me here, I say. No, I mean, why are you here in my life? I don't really know, Paxton. I'm asking myself that very same question. You've been stalking me, he says. For a long time, from the looks of it. Yes, I sigh. Obviously. And now you don't like what you see. I'm just questioning a lot of things tonight, that's all. About me, or why you've bothered. So we're talking about it? I ask again. Because once we start this, Pax, we won't be able to stop. He's silent for a moment. I finish my drink and hold the empty glass in my hands, twirling it around as I look out over the ocean. There's a nice moon tonight. Not full, not dark. Not crescent, just enough to see the beach and the track down below. You want to go to bed? With you? I ask, a tingle running up my body at the thought. He's so fucking handsome in this gray suit. His tie is loose around his neck, probably from the frustration of my drink demands, because it was tight before he left for the store. I bite my lip as he stares at me, that tingle turning into something more urgent as I stare back. Why not? We could make it fun. Turn this day around. End it on a high note. I have dreamed about sex with Mr. Mysterious for years. Since I was a kid, actually. And I know we've fucked 3 times already, but that was different. That was the other me. This is the real me. And now that my plans are all falling into place, it feels fake. Like I forced this. I wouldn't want to force you, I say. That word stuck in my mind. He laughs. Maybe a real one. You're the most striking girl I've ever dated. You're not forcing me to do anything. He has no idea how well planned this relationship was. Are we dating? I ask, suddenly sad. I know he's looking at me, and I know I'm being weird. I also know that I should make a decision right now and then never look back. Either stay here, sleep with him, and tell him the truth tomorrow, since we've decided not to talk about it tonight, or walk out and never look back. I'm on the verge of option 2 when I feel his hand slip around my waist. Whatever it is that's bothering you, can it wait until tomorrow? Or is it urgent? I like the feel of his hand over the thin fabric of my dress. It's large and warm, and when he pulls me closer, I feel weak with want. That was a lot of information to take in. From your mother, don't you think? I chance to look up at him and regret it immediately. He's somber. I don't think I've ever seen him somber. Are we talking about it? He whispers. I don't mind talking about it, if that's what you want. I lean up and kiss him, softly, right on the mouth. He doesn't kiss me back, and when I open my eyes, he's looking at me. He takes the drink from my hand, sets both glasses down on a nearby table, and then wraps his arms around me and holds me close. His lips are on my neck, and that urgent feeling I had turns into unquenchable desire. He holds my face, turning me towards him, and then his lips find mine and we are kissing again, only this time it's him leading the way. It starts slow, his hands dropping back to my waist, my hands reaching up for his shoulders. His kiss remains soft. Such a contradiction between the man on the outside I've come to know and the one I stalked all these years. But I don't know him, do I? Not one bit. He frightens me a little. His perfectly planned childhood, his unplanned past, and his unorthodox present. Like he's drifting through life, just waiting for something to happen as he takes bad opportunity after bad opportunity and tries to make something good out of them. Let's go to bed, Pax says again. I don't challenge him in any way this time. I don't care what the meaning is behind his words. He takes my hand, leading me back into the house and towards the stairs, taking those 2 at a time so my much shorter legs have to struggle to keep up. A shoe falls off my foot halfway up. The other follows a second later. The floor is cool and feels good as I follow him across a long catwalk that overlooks the living room and into a dark bedroom. He doesn't turn on the lights, and he wastes no time touching me. His fingertips are lifting up my dress. Feather light touches across the bare skin of my outer thigh, kissing me, fisting my hair, finding the wetness between my legs as the tingle becomes urge, becomes starvation and hunger for more. Take off my clothes, he says. Start with the tie. It's already loose, so it slips over his head. And don't hurry. We're not in a hurry. I've come to expect passion to equal fast and hard and out of control, but this is nothing like that, and yet, it is passionate. I tug on his shirt, lifting it out of his pants. My hand grazes against the thick bulge hidden away in there, making him bite my lip just a little. Just enough to get my attention. Oh, he has my attention, all right. I don't want to think about tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow won't even come. Need help? He asks, whispering the words into my mouth. I say nothing, just continue to fumble with the buttons of his shirt until I finally get them all undone, and I drag the expensive fabric over the curve of his shoulders and let it drop to the floor. His hands are dealing with the thin straps of my dress. They slide down, over my shoulders, his mouth momentarily distracted by my skin as he kisses and nips. My arms fall straight down my sides as he slips the top of my dress down to my waist, cups my breast in his palms, pushing them up towards my chin, squeezing them until I let out a sound.
"If you talk, if you say one word," he says, "I will lose control, and this will not be anything like I've imagined it."
I want to ask him how he's imagined it, but why ask when I can be patient and see for myself? He bends down, taking the skirt of my dress with him, and the silky fabric whooshes to the floor, making a small breeze against my ankles. He stands, kissing me and nipping me.
"Pants, Cindy."
My fist is around his cock, squeezing him the way he was squeezing me just seconds ago. He's warm and hard and ready for me.
"Pants," he says again.
The button flips undone, then the zipper is open, and my hand finds the flesh of his cock, warm and thick. Pressure on my shoulders as he guides me backwards. I bump into the bed and sit automatically. He drops to his knees in front of my face, giving me one more kiss before pushing me back into the soft comforter. I sigh, arms above my head at his silent urging. His mouth is on my ribs, his tongue tracing across my stomach, his kisses dropping lower and lower and lower until he's licking me through my panties. His fingers find their way underneath the fabric, pushing into me, making me gasp with pleasure and surprise. I say nothing as his mouth works on the delicate fold of skin that will make me come in a matter of seconds if he doesn't back down, two fingers inside me, stretching and searching for that spot. I say again.
"Shh."
He vibrates the request against my clit, and my hands fly to his biceps, fingernails digging in, my legs rising up and open to give him more access. He stands, kicks off his shoes, drops his pants, and then leans over me.
"I'm gonna fuck you for real now."
Chapter 16. Paxton. I grab her ankles and spread her legs wide, easing over the top of her, my chest to her breasts, my cock positioned at her entrance. She's so fucking wet. I wrap my fist around my dick and flick her clit a few times. Her whole body arches in response. "You like that?" I whisper, continuing the motion. She says nothing, her eyes squeezed tight, biting her lip, fingernails digging into my skin. I plunge inside her and she goes soft. Our hips move together for a moment, kinda slow, kinda easy. But then I lean down into her neck and bite her earlobe, going faster and faster as she responds to this new direction. Her tits bounce against me, legs wrapped around my body, knees pressed against my hips. And she smells like sugar. Everything about her is sweet. The little moans she's making, the scent of her hair, her pink lips and those perfect nipples. I lean in and bite her lip. Her eyes open and I start pumping her harder, slapping against the inside of her thighs. Everything is wet and hot and time just needs to stand still so this never has to end. "I'm gonna come," she whispers. "Not yet." "Oh, shit. Oh, fuck yes. Fuck me. Fuck me." "Okay," I laugh, enjoying her little show. "Yeah, okay. Come, sugar. Come all over me." Her hands are suddenly in my hair, twisting and pulling like she's holding on to me, never gonna let me go. "Pax," she moans out. She's still fucking coming. I feel wave after wave after wave of contractions against my dick as I slow down. "No," she says. "Harder, harder, harder, harder." I speed back up, pounding her now. She is gushing with cum. My dick slides in and out of her pussy. I stand back up, grab hold of her hip bones, and watch the curve of my cock enter and almost exit her opening. The lips of her pussy wrap around my shaft like a glove. like we are puzzle pieces fitting together. And then her fingers are there, pushing against her clit, rubbing as she continues to moan. I slap her hand away. I don't need help. She laughs, eyes closed again. Something is wrong with me. I'm so fucking horny right now. I just came, twice, and I need more. Her eyes fly open and she stares at me. Flip me over. Nobody tells me that twice. I step back and flip her whole body over, push her knees up, press her head down onto the comforter, and tongue her wet pussy, flicking against her clit. I forgot to tell you, are we talking about this? I ask, still trying to lick her. I'm a squirter. What? Shit! She wiggles away from me, kicking out and squirming her way across the bed. What the fuck are you doing? I don't want to ruin this bed. I'm telling you, I'm a squirter, and this will be pretty messy if we keep going. I grab her by the ankles and pull her back to me, then reach under, lift her up, and hoist her over my shoulder. What are you doing? She squeals. Taking this to the shower. I walk across the room, flip the light on in the master bath, take her into the massive shower, and set her down on the marble bench. Don't move, I say, my eyes never leaving hers as I reach around and feel for the steam switch on the wall, flick it on, and then look hungrily at my girl as the mist wafts around us in floating tendrils. Squirter, huh? She bites her lip to stifle a laugh. And you know this how? I should shut the fuck up. I don't want to know how she knows, but I can't help it. She shakes her head and giggles. Cindy. When I masturbate, it gets overwhelming and then, you know, that happens. And the way you were touching me in there, it felt like... Masturbation? I say with a cockeyed smile. Nice recovery. I drop to my knees, push her back so she's resting against the wall, and do it exactly the way I was, quickly flicking my dick against her clit. She grabs onto the edge of the stone bench this time, her knees pulling up automatically. Like this? I ask, never taking my eyes off her. And then she's out of control. Her moans turn into gasps, turn into screams. I cup my hand over her mouth automatically, momentarily startled as she writhes and kicks and, yes, squirts. I don't think anything has ever turned me on so much in my entire life. I take her hands, pulling her up to standing. She wobbles like she's not under control yet. So I reach under her thighs, lift her up, press her against the wall, and pound her hard until there's no way I'm stopping. I pound her until there is nothing on my mind but coming inside her. She squeezes my hips with her thighs, so tight, so focused. My hands come up to her face, glistening from the steam, and I kiss her and fuck her until she comes again, and there is only one thing left to do. Finish. Fuck. Yes. That was perfect. She collapses against my chest, spent and tired. I walk backwards until I find the bench and then sit down with her in my lap. Her face is buried in my neck. We are sweaty and hot and breathing in the steam like the air we are sucking is life-saving. I rest my head back against the wall, close my eyes, and let go. Maybe for the first time in my life, I just let it all go. The past, the jobs, the future, it's gone, wiped away in the aftermath of lust. After a few minutes of stillness, she eases backward, gets up, turns the steam off, and then starts the shower. She makes the water cool, then grabs my hand and pulls me to my feet. We wash each other, hair, body, soul. And then we dry each other off and I lead her out to the bedroom, collapsing onto the soft comforter, not even bothering to get underneath it. I just grab her and never let go. Pull her into my chest, wrap my hands around her breasts, and sleep. I wake up to the sun beaming down on my face, reaching for Cindy, finding her gone. What did I expect? I swing my legs over the side of the bed, rub the stubble on my jaw with both hands, and then stand up and take a piss in the bathroom. That was the best sex I've ever had, and I know, I just fucking know. It's only the beginning if I get to see her again after we talk about it. I pull on some boxer briefs and walk towards the stairs, surprised when I cross the catwalk and see her, back to me, cooking at the stove in the open kitchen down below. I don't say anything. I don't even know if I have words for what this is, what I'm doing. But I stop at the top of the stairs when I see the shoe, left there last night as I brought her up here. It's fitting, right? Cinderella leaves a shoe on the stairs, and then Prince Charming has to go looking for her with only that one shoe as his clue. The other shoe is further down, and it's a good sign, I think, that we are not that story. She didn't disappear. I don't have to go searching for her. We can spend the day together. No one to stop us. Start something new. No rules or expectations or baggage to drag us down. Well, that's a fairy tale too, I guess. Because I've got baggage, man. I've got a huge amount of baggage, and there's no fairy godmother coming to make it all better. What are you doing? I ask, reaching the bottom of the steps. Cooking, she chirps, flipping something over in a pan. This is the Cindy I know. Happy, cheerful, easygoing. Where'd you get food? I say, coming up behind her and wrapping my arms around her body so I can squeeze her tits and kiss her neck. She's wearing an apron, of all things. It's yellow, like her hair, with cookies on it, and a tank top and shorts. Sugar. God damn it if she doesn't smell like sugar, even after staying in someone else's house, taking a shower with their scented soaps and shampoos, and frying bacon in a pan. I borrowed your car and went to the store. You left? I ask. I came back. She says it like she might not have. Where'd you get these clothes? She's wearing my dress shirt and a pair of man's shorts that must be Nolan's, which means she's been snooping around the house while I was sleeping. What time did you wake up? What? She feigns ignorance. I feign with her. Are we talking about this yet? Who she is, where she came from, how she knows all these things and why she's been watching me? If we talk about that, well, then we'll have to talk about my mother, the silver pledge, whatever the fuck that is. Those envelopes, the note, the game. Smells good, I say. I can play along. I don't even mind playing along. What time do you have to be in the office today? How'd she know I have to be in the office today? Forget it. We're not talking about it. What time is it? I ask. 11:30. Shit, I say, threading my fingers through my hair. I have a client today. I know. Mr. Walker's son went missing 2 weeks ago. It's out of character and no leads so far. The police aren't interested, so he came to you. We really should start talking about this, but instead of starting that conversation, I say, do you want to help me find him? I could use a good assistant. She looks over her shoulder, gives me a sidelong smirk. You don't even have to ask. I'm already on it. I pulled up his phone records, and even though there doesn't seem to be a pattern, there is a number he calls every Tuesday evening. He's called it without fail for over a year, but he only calls once a week, so it's not an easy pattern to see when you look at all the hundreds of other calls and texts he sends. He's a chatty guy, but I found it, so we can start there if you want. I pull her hair aside, giving myself better access to her neck, and I kiss her again. She sighs, leans against me just slightly, just enough to let me know we don't really need to talk about it. Denial is our friend today. She squirms out of my embrace and grabs two plates sitting on the counter. She scoops up some scrambled eggs from another pan, then the bacon, loading up each plate as the toast pops up. Butter that for me, will you? The butter is sitting out on the counter already, soft, so I grab the toast and butter it up, dropping the slices on the plates just as she whisks them away to the dining table in front of the big picture window that overlooks the racetrack. I made mimosas, too. You like mimosas, right? She smiles at me. I hate champagne, but I smile back and say, almost as much as I like margaritas and mint juleps. I hope you're hungry, she says, smiling into her glass as she takes a drink. I'm going to fuck you on my desk this afternoon. She almost spits out her mimosa. And then at my house tonight. Okay. And we're never talking about it. She swallows hard and nods. Okay. It's softer than the last okay, filled with relief and maybe even some regret. but then she forces another smile, lifts her glass, and says, "To new beginnings." I'll drink to that. I do believe I will come to love this drink, and all the girly things this sweet-smelling Cinderella has brought into my life, if only for the fact that they symbolize something. Not a beginning, but an end. Fuck those silver envelopes. Fuck that rape charge. Fuck everything but what happens from this day forward. It's over. I am Prince Charming in this story, and I decree the bullshit to be over.
Chapter 17. Cindy. Everything is smooth sailing for almost a week. We find that jerk of a son from Mr. Walker. He was on a drug binge. We looked up that one number later that day and traced it to a phone booth. Who knew they still have those things? Outside the Dairyman's Pub in Santa Monica. Some high-end dealer uses that thing as an office. So we followed him, and, well, all sorts of boring drama unfolded. But the point is, we cracked that case in 3 days. Since then, Mr. Walker has referred us to many of his private friends, as he likes to call them. Just little things. One guy thought his wife was cheating. One woman thought her husband was cheating. And it occurs to me now that the very nature of Paxton Vance's business has begun to change. It's like he's not a fixer anymore. He really is my fictional detective. We never do talk about it, even though it feels, to me anyway, that there's this big question mark hanging over us. We don't talk about any of it. Not his mother, not the day at the races, not my past, not how conveniently I left my life in Malibu behind and moved in with him. Not any of it. The phone rings and I pick it up. Mr. Vance's office, how can I help you? What? Oh, shit. I do not need more than one word to tell me who is on the other end of this phone. My brother, Oliver. I clear my throat. Mr. Vance's office? I repeat, using a fake high voice. How can I help you? Since when does he have a fucking secretary? Assistant, I say, still using my high voice. Is he there or not? I never knew my brother was such a dick. No, I'm sorry, sir. He's out of the office for the week. I smile and wave at Pax through the closed glass door to his office, then shake my head, stick out my tongue like this is nothing but a stupid sales call, and he laughs, looking back down at his paperwork. The fucking week? When exactly will he be back? I tried his cell, but he's not picking up. Why isn't he picking up?
He's not picking up because he left his cell at home today by accident. Jesus Christ, what if Oliver comes here? No. He's all the way over in Colorado. This is no big deal.
He's in the Exuma case, Mr.
Shrike,
Oliver says, thoroughly annoyed with me now. It's not my fault Pax is off gallivanting. Well, if he was off gallivanting, it wouldn't be my fault. And Oliver doesn't know he's not. So, Dick.
Mr. Shrike, Mr. Vance is gone for the whole week and won't be back until next Monday. He's on a break. No tech out there.
Since when? I know damn well he's got internet and TV on that fucking island.
Shit. Think, Cindy. He's on that other island. Yeah, that other island. He's got two. He told me that.
Since when does he have two? Never mind. Let him know I called if he calls in, and tell him to hit me back pronto.
The phone goes dead, and I just stare at it for a second.
Who was that?
Pax asks from his open door. Shit. How much did he hear? I have no idea. Some rude salesman asking about copy machines.
Copy machines?
I have to control my eye roll at myself. Copy machines? Who the fuck sells copy machines anymore, Cinderella? People just use printers in an office this size. Pax narrows his eyes at me. Suspicion, I realize. He was handsome in a rugged sort of way. The narrow eyes widen. A smile. A real man's man with his rolled-up sleeves and loose tie.
Is this how you see me?
Paxton asks. Smart enough to get into Ivy League schools, wise enough to get by without them.
Shit,
he whispers under his breath. And the first time I walked into his office, desperate for help.
Oh, I get it. This is some 1940s detective noir.
All I could think about was how long it would take him to bend me over his desk. Now he laughs, but stifles it with a closed fist in front of his mouth. Hike up my skirt and take me from behind. I stop to smile with him. God, he's cute. Hoping, when he finally did that, he wouldn't see the run in my stockings, the broken buckle on my shoe.
Downtrodden dame, Pax says. Nice touch.
The cheap scent of my perfume.
Sugar, baby. Like you stepped out of a bakery every time I see you. There's nothing cheap about smelling sweet.
I have him now. That phone call is long forgotten. But it's fun, so I keep going with my little narration. And he'd just lose himself in my lust.
Lust, huh?
I take a deep breath. Happy. Happier than I've ever been, I think. You're fun, you know that?
You're fun, he says, coming close enough to grab my waist and twirl me around. Is this how the story starts, then? You're a dame looking for help from the down-and-out unorthodox detective.
I go up on my tiptoes and kiss him, our mouths fitting together in that perfect puzzle piece way they do. His hands slip from my hips to my ass, and he gives my cheeks a squeeze before hiking up my skirt, exposing my bare skin to the cool office air.
I won't be able to find that run in your stocking, sugar, because you're not wearing anything but this thong.
I'm not really a stocking kind of girl, but I can be if it turns you on.
Should I pick up a trench coat?
I laugh, then lean into his neck and just sigh.
What?
He asks, nuzzling my hair. I like you.
Well, he kisses my earlobe. That's perfect, because I like you too.
You don't think I'm weird, even though I can be a little over the top?
You? He pulls back in mock surprise. No.
I know, right? We smile at each other. Why did I start the story again? Oh, yeah. Phone call. What phone call?
You're definitely unique, Miss Sugar.
Miss Sugar, I huff.
And impulsive. And quite the little liar.
What? Shit. What does he know? I own the sub shop, he says, faking a high voice.
I was checking on you in there.
He nods his head to his office. Damn it, I was gonna tell you.
I don't care.
I lied about the sub shop. I was bribing the delivery driver so I could meet you once I noticed you were ordering takeout.
So where do you live? Where do you keep the clothes you keep going home for?
With you, now. I smile, not sure how this will go since this is kind of the start of talking about it. But I was living out of a backpack in a trailer at the campground up PCH.
Not a trust fund baby.
Oh, I am, I laugh. But my father likes to parcel that shit out a little at a time. There's all kinds of restrictions on it. I didn't even get a monthly allowance for college. Every semester he took a trip out to my school to pay my tuition in person. I got a little bit when I turned 18, just enough to buy a car and live in the dorms. Then I got a little bit more at graduation, but I used it for grad school. You see the pattern, I'm sure.
So you're broke.
Does it matter?
No, Pax says. No, I'm just asking if you're broke.
Not broke. I am an investigator. I have jobs I get off my brother's website. Holy motherfucking shit. What the hell is wrong with you, Cindy Shrike? Cinderella Vaughn has no brother. I scramble to recover from my mistake. Well, I'm doing your jobs now, I say. So I'm not working on anything myself, but I get by. I'm not broke.
The trust fund is over.
Phew, he didn't notice. Do you get a trust fund? I ask, following his lead.
Me? Ha! He laughs. Nope, my mother is a dig-yourself-out-of-your-own-hole kind of woman. But I don't need a trust fund. I made smart decisions back in the day.
He's got this weird smirk on his face, like he's pulling something over on the whole world. What, did you steal it or something?
Steal it? Why would I steal it? That's a weird question. You remind me of Match, you know that.
Oh, fuck. I was totally safe about the call, and now we're right back where I started. Who? I ask innocently.
Oliver Shrike, Mr. Match, one of the five who was accused. It's funny. When he and I had our first money conversation, he asked me the same thing. Said his father pulled some kind of con when he was younger, and ever since he found that out, he was...
I lose track of his words. I was there when Oliver found out the kind of stuff my dad used to do with his friends before any of us kids were born. It was crazy. Ariel was the one who dug up the dirt. Just a casual, let's see what kind of dirt we can find on Dad kind of thing. We never expected what we found.
Cindy.
What? Pax is looking at me expectantly, like he's waiting for an answer. Sorry, I just kind of spaced out for a minute thinking about your Mr. friend.
Hmm.
What kind of hmm was that? Suspicious? I thought you were going to fuck me on the desk.
Is that right? Pax says.
We went from titillating fantasy to money. No one likes to talk about money, Pax. But sex, I say with a wink. Now there's a fun subject. I lean back into his neck, trying my best to recapture the moment, but it's gone. Just then a knock on the door pulls us apart. I whirl around to see that man who came to visit Pax up in Malibu. Liam.
What the hell are you doing here?
Pax says.
I told you, Liam. I'm not interested in your problem or your job. Who's this?
Liam's attention turns to me as I hastily finish straightening out my skirt.
No one you need to remember, Pax says, turning to me. Cindy. Can you go grab me lunch from that sandwich shop down the street? Get my usual, please.
Is he kidding? Trying to get me out of here without this weirdo noticing me too much? Or blowing me off? Sure, I say, not meeting his eyes as I pick up my purse and head towards the door.
Let's talk in here, Paxton says.
I chance one look back before I leave, but they disappear into his office.
Chapter 18. Paxton. Liam is smiling like he's got a secret. It pisses me off that he came into my life uninvited for the second time, but I keep the temper in check as I close the door behind him, then walk around to my desk and take a seat. The polite thing to do when talking to an equal is to sit in one of the two chairs facing the desk, with the guest in the chair next to yours. But I sit behind the desk for a reason. I'm the one in charge here, and I want him to know it. Plus, his back is to the door, and I can see straight through the glass to Cindy's desk, and I have the phone in front of me. Let me just put this on Do Not Disturb in case Cindy comes back and wants to disturb us. Liam brushes a piece of lint off his navy blue suit coat like he couldn't care less. Pretty, that one. But a little slutty for a man of your breeding, don't you think? Her ass was hanging out her skirt when I came in. Why are you here? I asked calmly, trying my best not to lean across this desk, grab Liam Henry by the tie, and choke this motherfucker to death. Mr. Corporate, he says, taking out a notepad from his suit coat pocket. Do you know his real name? I laugh. Weston Conrad, the guy I've known for 10 years. And how well do you really think you know him? Liam is smiling like he's got a secret. Look, if you've got something to say, then say it. Corporate and I aren't besties. We're not partners or hell, even friends from my perspective. I don't give a fuck who he is, but you obviously think I should, so let's hear all your little secrets about him, and hopefully that will explain away your bizarre stalking and I won't have to kill you over it. Liam narrows his eyes, wondering if that's a threat, a joke, or a promise. Damn. I hadn't realized how good it felt to be the bad guy since I've been hanging out with Cindy doing her cute little detective jobs, but I sort of miss these moments. Well, his name isn't Weston Conrad, for one, and for two, he stole something from me a very long time ago, something I want back. I'll ask this again, and I'll try to be as concise as I can so you will stop wasting my time. What does this have to do with me? I thought you'd like to know who set you up back in college. Forgive me, he says, standing up and buttoning his coat, for interrupting the nooner you were about to have with your secretary. Sit down, I command. Oh, so you're interested all of a sudden. But Liam unbuttons his suit coat and sits, smiling like a cat with a canary. Corporate was accused, too. It makes no sense that he was the one who set us up. But I have always had a problem with corporate. I mean, I have always had a problem with romantic, too. But corporate, he never did add up. Romantic has a pretty paper-trailed past leading from point A to point B in a nice, straight line. Corporate's past is like a dot-to-dot puzzle that I could never quite figure out. Match and Five and I worked on it relentlessly 10 years ago when these charges came up, and even though Five has got to be one of the most talented hackers in modern day that I know of, we came up with very little before he went to boarding school as a teenager, which means part of his past was hidden off the record for a reason. Well, he did set you up. He did. And I have all the proof and all the details, and you will get every bit of it once he's gone. Gone? I ask. You want me to kill him? I laugh. I need him delivered to me alive so I can get this information out of him, but your run-of-the-mill accident will suffice once that business is taken care of. I'm not a professional killer, Liam. You know this. I have no problem killing people, but it's not what I do. I like people to think it is... keeps them scared. Distant. But I don't kill people for money, for fuck's sake. That's insane. My mother would never respect me if I was a paid assassin. You fix things. I need a fix. I only fix things if I have all the details. He reaches into his pocket again, pulls out a neatly folded stack, kind of thick stack, of legal-sized papers. And here's our problem, he says, grabbing the Mont Blanc pen off my desk and tapping it on the wood. I have those details, and you can have them too if you sign this non-disclosure agreement. I laugh, kind of loud. First of all, I say, I don't sign anything without a lawyer looking it over first, and second of all, I'm never signing that, no matter what. So if you'd like to pay for my services, it's going to be done with my own standard non-disclosure agreement, or it won't be done at all. Fair enough, Liam says, folding the wad of legal papers back up and placing them back in his coat pocket. I'll sign your agreement. He's setting me up. I'm 100% sure of it. But he does have my attention, so I get up, go to the file cabinet, and pull out the standard non-disclosure agreement I have with all my clients. I slap the single piece of paper down on my desk in front of Liam and take my seat back behind it. Liam signs. I drag the paper over to my side, sign, then put the pen down and steeple my fingers under my chin. Let's hear it. Weston Conrad isn't his real name. The Conrads aren't even his parents. I say. Go on. He's mixed up with a girl right now, someone from his past. Do you remember her? Victoria Arias? They were dating when that charge came against the five of you. Kind of. Dark, right? Pretty? Wild? Yes, Liam nods, smiling big. I'd call her more than pretty, though. But yes, that's her. They broke up all the time, I say, recalling that little volatile relationship with ease, now that her name has been mentioned. But she is the reason you got in all that trouble, Paxton. Her and him. They are the reason. And while I could really care less about Miss Arias, she has her own keeper who will take care of business on that end, I very much need Mr. Conrad to understand that I have not forgotten what he did to me. And you want me to teach him that lesson? Just get him out of the country. That's all I ask. I have a team of people ready to take over once that happens. You won't even have to dirty your hands. Other than setting him up? Correct. Why me? But I know the answer before he says it. Because Conrad trusts you. Regardless of whether or not you are besties, as you put it, you're part of his inner circle. And he set me up. That makes zero sense. Oh, but it does. You just need more information. Information I will provide once he's out of the country. I pick up my pen and tap the desk, thinking it over. I told you that first time I called. Your Mr. Friends are becoming a problem. That whole debacle with Alan and Perfect could have been a PR nightmare. Mac. And now your romantic friend is directing a lot of attention back to the five of you. Nolan. Corporate needs to pay his dues. He owes me. And once I tell you the truth about him, you'll want your revenge as well. West. It's like a checklist, isn't it? One by one, we are all being drawn back in. I'll think about it. You have one night, Mr. Vance. One night before I take things into my own hands and deal with the situation another way. He stands, buttons his coat jacket, says, "You won't like that way, I assure you. So I'll expect a text this evening saying you'll accept my offer and an outline of how you will do as I ask. Use the same number I used that first time I called." He walks out, closing my office door behind him. I sit for a moment, then remember that Cindy came back and ducked under the desk just as I push the intercom instead of the Do Not Disturb button on the phone. She stands up and looks at me through the glass doors of my office. I open the door and ask, "Did you catch all that?" She nods. "What's going on?" "I have no clue, but that shit that went down with Nolan last week was not cool, man. I might not like that asshole all that much, but he had nothing to do with anything that happened to us back in school. I know it for a fact. I saw his dirt, and that's all it is. It's dirty as fuck, for sure, but it's got nothing to do with the rape charge." "So it really was Weston Conrad who set you up?" "I don't know. I don't fucking know." "What are you going to do?" She hesitates. "You're really going to work with that guy? Pax, he's unstable, clearly. He's fucking creepy." "Yeah," I say, letting out a long breath. "Yeah, you're right. I'm going to pretend to think about it for a few hours, then send him a text saying no." She smiles. "Good. Good. I know this is the right answer. You need to stay away from him." "Let's take the day off, huh? Go back home. Grill some steaks. Make some stupid girly drinks and just forget about Liam Henry." Cindy smiles. "That's definitely the best idea I've heard all day." I try not to be silent and introspective as we start the drive back up to Malibu, but I don't have to try too hard because Cindy is chatty enough. It kind of sucks that she's part of this, that I dragged her into something that's got nothing to do with her, especially since Liam already saw her, so even if I wanted to keep her out of this whole mess, it wouldn't be easy to pull off now. Girlfriends are dangerous. Match knows this better than anyone. It's why he fucks them and leaves them as fast as he can. Girlfriends are nothing but collateral damage waiting to happen.
Chapter 19. Cindy. "So what do you think?" Pax says as he changes lanes. The traffic on the 405 is horrendous, and we are still a long way from Malibu. "My detective story." "Oh," he says, braking hard as he tries to maneuver into the next lane. "Where are you going?" "We're taking PCH. I can't handle this shit anymore. I really need to think about moving."
"Moving where?"
"Huh?"
"God, are you even listening to me?"
Pax smiles and shoots me a wink. "Sorry. I'm just preoccupied with road rage at the moment." He swerves over, then again, and takes the off-ramp at El Segundo. "I love your story. I can totally see you in one of those sexy pencil skirts with the thick-heeled pumps and your hair up in a 40s do. You'd rock that shit, sugar."
"Thanks," I say, blushing. "You'd rock a trench coat and fedora, too. So I got the idea when I was 7, and my parents took this murder mystery train up in the mountains."
"Mountains? I thought you lived on a farm. Your dad's place comes up as Severance, Colorado."
"Shit, why am I so stupid?"
"Well, yeah," I say, recovering quickly. "But, you know, the mountains aren't too far away. We'd go there sometimes." "Don't they have one of those murder mystery trains in Cannon City? I think I remember Match telling me about it once. That's pretty far from Severance, right?"
Damn, he's really up on his Colorado geography. "That's the one," I say, nervously swallowing. Does he know more than I think he does? Is he testing me to see if I'll lie? And did I ever tell him I was from Severance? Nope, I'm pretty sure I didn't.
"He was checking up on you again this afternoon, Cindy. Duh.
You're doing good pretending this Liam shit didn't rattle your world. Keep going."
"Asshole," Pax says, flipping the finger to some guy who cuts him off.
I'm definitely getting out of California first chance I get. Sorry, he says, looking at me. Go on. The murder mystery train.
Yeah, I say, dropping my suspicions. I think he's just distracted with driving. I'm being paranoid. So they were all in costume, you know?
Yeah, I can totally picture it. How old were you? Did you have blonde pigtails?
I smile, remembering that day. It was my parents' anniversary. But if Oliver was talking about it once, he might have mentioned that, so I don't bring it up. I was young. I don't remember how old, but I was obsessed with Humphrey Bogart movies after that.
Huh, Pax says. Oliver likes those, too. Must be a Colorado thing.
I don't move. He knows. He has to know. Are we talking about it? I ask.
What? Why? Do you want to talk about it?
Do you?
No, he says. No. We're forgetting, remember?
Okay, yeah, I'm paranoid. So, anyway, I was obsessed with the old movies and I started dressing up and stuff. My mom's not into that kind of thing. Vintage class and all that. She's more of a... And my stupid ass is just about to say bombshell when I stop short. He will definitely know my mother as a bombshell. Oliver can't have left that out. My father calls her bomb all the time. And I know Pax has been to our house at least twice, both times while I was in college, so he never saw me there. But still, once you see my mother, you form an opinion and you never forget it. More Doris Day.
Aw, you take after her, right? Sweet and shit.
Yep, I laugh, picturing anyone calling my mother sweet. Hell, anyone calling me sweet is just as funny. We are so alike. Anyway, I got into it. We did Death of a Salesman in high school, and I played the part of the woman.
The sexy tramp.
Yeah, I laugh. I get it now, of course, but back then I just wanted to wear the clothes.
Did you nail it?
Broke a leg. But really, it just fanned the flames of my obsession. Pax gets quiet all of a sudden. Shit, what did I say?
Me?
He asks, looking over for a second before returning his eyes to the highway.
Was I your Bogart?
I glance past him to the ocean, which is flying by as we travel north. Maybe a little.
We shouldn't talk about it.
Right.
We should just enjoy it.
Yeah. I say softly.
But I love your story. The real one and the fairy tale, too.
I lean back into my seat, relaxing. Okay, maybe he knows something. But he can't know I'm Oliver's sister. I just don't think he'd be so calm about that.
We can play dress-up if you want, Pax says.
My smile is huge at that offer. You'd dress up? I laugh, just picturing it. In a trench coat and hat?
Sugar, if you put on some stockings and red lipstick, and maybe nothing else, I'll do anything you ask. You want a fantasy night? I'm there.
I lean over and place my hand on his dick. He grins, changes lanes, and pulls off the highway. What are you doing?
That's a signal I don't ignore, Cinderella. You want sexy times? You get sexy times.
It's not even dark out.
Who cares? I got a boat at Marina del Rey. Want to see my boat?
He cups his hand over mine, making me squeeze his already thick cock. I lean over and start kissing his neck.
Yeah, let's see the boat. Play with yourself while I drive, he says, not looking at me. I want you wet and ready the minute we get there.
And then he tips his sunglasses up and looks me in the eyes.
Do not squirt in my car.
I hold up three fingers. Scout's honor. We laugh.
But seriously, he says,
staring over at me. Laugh gone, smile gone.
Play with yourself while I drive, and start by taking those panties off, one leg at a time.
God, he is hot. I kick off my sandals, place both feet on the dashboard, and then lift my hips up just enough to wiggle my panties down to my thighs. He's watching from the corner of his eye. Keep your eyes on the road, Mr. Vance. I'm just feeling a little warm and need some relief, but this is none of your concern. That smile is worth every bit of the cheesiness I feel right now.
A nice woman, he says, giving me one more look as the panties make their way past my knees, slide down my calves, and stop at my ankles.
Wouldn't need the kind of relief taking your panties off would provide.
I'm not a nice woman, Detective. I'm a slut. I told you I need help, and you blew me off back in your office because I have no money. Well, just because I can't pay you in money, Detective, doesn't mean I can't pay you at all. His smile is so big, but he keeps his eyes on the road as he gets his laugh under control.
Consider the show you're about to give me a down payment. Now turn your body so I can see you, and then open your slutty legs wide.
I do what he wants. I take off my seatbelt, angle myself with my back against the door, and then open my legs.
Your skirt's in the way, Miss Sugar.
That's Miss Sugar Cookie to you, Detective. He's almost giggling, and it makes me happy that I have the power to make him happy, even after that fucked-up visit from Liam Henry this afternoon.
Pull your skirt up and play with yourself,
he says in a low voice, then glances at me with heavy eyes.
This is the game I want to play right now.
Don't worry, I whisper in a soothing tone. I'm just getting started. I pull my skirt up and give him a good look. We stop at a light. I can see the marina a few blocks ahead, off to the left. Do you want me to do it like this? I say, pushing my fingers inside myself.
You little Disney whore.
But he licks his lips, and I picture his mouth where my fingers are, licking and lapping against my pussy, and I have to close my eyes. I'm not a whore, I say in my best sultry dame in distress voice, then open my eyes again. I forgot to tell you, I'm a virgin. This time he does laugh, loudly.
Are you?
Yes, I say. So I might not want to do anything too fun today, Detective. I'm saving myself for Prince Charming. The light turns green, but Paxton watches me as my fingertips caress the wet folds between my legs until the car behind us honks. He starts forward and then turns left, towards the marina.
Are you going to tease me, Miss Cookie?
Oh, I say, moaning a little. I love teasing men. It's how I got into this situation in the first place.
You pretended to be a whore, but when they found out you were a virgin, they...
threatened my life, I pretend sob. You'll help me, won't you?
Tell me what kind of help you need, Miss Cookie.
I just can't stop, I pretend sob again. Teasing. Help me stop, please. He chuckles in a sexy, you have no idea how much I love this game kind of way.
I'll do my best, ma'am.
Jesus fuck, are we there yet, Pax? I really do need you to lick my pussy. But all I get in response is a sly smile. Oh shit. I have a feeling he's going to take my little fantasy farther than I expected.
Chapter 20. Paxton. I hold her hand as we walk through the marina towards the slip where I keep my boat. The place is busy, crowded and bustling until we get away from the clubhouse and onto the dock. This is nice. I love the water. One thing that I never got much of growing up. Yeah, I say. It's perfect right now. I look down at her and smile. Better than letting you tease me while I sit in traffic ready to murder someone. She laughs a little as I put my hand on the small of her back, directing her to go right. You know, she says, just when I think I've got you figured out, you pull something like this on me. Like what? A boat, islands, houses, all of it. Well, you can't have an island without a boat. It's on the wrong coast, though. You said your islands were in the Exuma Cays. Oh, I laugh. I have a boat on that coast, too. Besides, if you have two islands, you really need two boats. Is that your rationale? My story, I say, and I'm sticking to it. But that brings us back to your story, Miss Cookie, after you. I stop beside my boat and hold her hand as she steps up, then follow her on board. Her eyes are wide and excited, but pretty soon they'll be heavy with lust. I can help you with your little problem, but since you can't pay, I'll need something else from you. She bites away the smile as I start to untie the boat. Wait, we're going?